I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks.
Herzlich willkommen zum Larger Living Podcast, dein Podcast zum original intuitiven Essen nach Resch und Triboli, Health at Every Size, Body Image, Feminismus und einer Prise Ethnologie. Ich bin Dot und ich bin deine Wegweiserin raus aus dem Diätendschungel hin zu mehr Selbstakzeptanz, mehr Selbstvertrauen, gesunder Selbstfürsorge und Frieden mit dem Essen und deinem Körper. Lehn dich zurück, mach's dir gemütlich, schnapp dir ein Heißgetränk deiner Wahl. Wir legen los. Welcome, Nina, to the Larger Living Podcast. I'm excited to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I'm very excited. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
So I should disclose how I know you. I sometimes do a little bit of a sort of disclaimer deal if I know people from different situations or if I know them better. So you, I know, kind of good, I'd say, because mm-hmm. we both have been in the same coaching cohort at Animas Coaching School. So we trained together, and during the training, Nina coached me a couple of times. I coached Nina back a couple of times. So I've kind of been witness to her journey in coaching, and she has been witness to mine. We share that coaching bond.
Yeah, we have, definitely.
Yeah, we share that coaching bond. You helped me personally when I had a personal crisis, and I really want to thank you for this publicly, even.
You're welcome.
Because not just are you a great person, I think you're also an amazing coach. You have a very warm presence, very, very warm, very present. I always felt at ease when you were coaching me. I even get little chills talking about it.
Yeah, I just thought goosebumps too. Thank you, Dot. It was a pleasure coaching you, and it was such a pleasure being coached by you. The first thing that I was attracted to, it was just your energy. I was like, I want to be friends with her.
Yeah, I have enough energy for two people sometimes.
Yeah.
That's my boner, baby. Yeah. that's the thing. Yeah. I'm generally a very high energy person. That is true.
Yeah, and it's great, and you own it, so it's perfect.
It wasn't always that way. That I can tell you. Like I think that at my core I am a very high energy person. Like even as a little girl, but that I kind of got shamed for being loud, for being out there, for being too curious, for asking too many questions. I even experienced that technology shaming that some girls experience from my grandfather, of don't touch this or else you break it kind of deal. When, you know, boys are encouraged to touch and play with toys and take them apart and rebuilding that, I really got like the real, oh no, that's not for girls kind of deal. It took me a long, long time to kind of tap back into that energy. But now that I have.
Flourishing. You're doing a great thing there.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope that I can encourage some listeners, some maybe viewers, and surely some of my clients to do the same. So
that's really it.
That's really it. But so I knew you from a very special angle, from the coaching colleague kind of angle, and we're going to talk about coaching, that's for sure. But I also figured out that I don't know you from the angle that your normal clients would get to know you. So please introduce you to me and introduce yourself to me and to the world.
Thank you. That was an awesome intro. So I am Nina and I am a life coach. I have not always been a life coach. We'll start there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I, as Dot mentioned, as you mentioned, we met, it was last year already. I can't believe it's been a year. Wow.
I know.
But
right?
It's just going so quickly. But I have been a life coach for coming on a year now. I wasn't always, like I said, I worked in hospitality before. I managed restaurants before. I was working on a startup restaurant as well. And that came to an abrupt halt in March of 2020.
Go figure.
Yeah. So after about a week of complete anxiety and like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do with my life? What's happening? This coaching course just kind of fell into place for me because it's something that I really felt connected to for a long time. And I don't know if you can relate, Dot, but
oh, I can.
I'm all
already. Yeah.
But I always have been the therapist friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Goddamn. The therapist and the secrets keeper.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And it's an interesting dynamic, but, yeah. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think that I naturally sort of have this bond with people and I enjoy every second of it. It's not a chore at all. Yeah, so that was it. It then started my journey of just going down, and I've been on quite a life journey myself, and sort of self-development journey myself, and had, you know, my own, a lot of therapy and the coaching myself, which really, really develops you as a person, and you kind of are able to see what others are going through.
Yeah.
Through a different lens to themselves, and it's that's what's so powerful about coaching. Like you people are just so quick to judge themselves of their own patterns or their own behaviors, but they don't really understand that there's more to it than that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's just, you know, coaching in Germany has a very bad reputation. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it really has. Because that's the same for Britain, I'm sure, because coaching, or like calling yourself a coach, is not a protected profession. Like, you don't have to study at a specific school like we both did in order to call yourself a coach. Yeah. You can just wake up tomorrow, snap your fingers, call yourself a coach, and go to work without any form of training, any qualifications, just, you know. And some people do it. Yeah. And a lot of people in Germany are taking advantage of that loophole, calling themselves like coaches, or do a weekend seminar and then, you know, position themselves as the guru of gurus, right? And the whole, you know, self-love guru kind of bullshit that's going on. So when you come there with your little Animas certification that most Germans don't know, because it's a UK-based school. This is why you have that lovely accent, and I'm talking in English to you today. it's just like they presume that I have done a weekend course and then I call myself a coach, but I haven't. There's really more to it. And I also, just like you say, it's not just sitting there and active listening and making and aha and tell me more and mirroring back what people tell us and then asking what's next. It's not just that. No. Because that is just like the baseline of coaching. That is the absolute baseline. It can help. And it's great. And it's great for rapport building also. And it's great to, you know, of course, when you meet your coach for the first time, you have to throw everything in that room and you have to tell them, yeah, look, this is what's going on with me. This is, you have to unpack, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But, and of course, then the coach is listening and mirroring back stuff to you and also like trying and helping you make sense of what you just said and putting it into perspective, of course. But that is not just all we do.
Yeah.
Because if that is the only thing that you bring to coaching, then you are, you still are a coach. But I would say that you are doing your clients a disservice, because we have not been coaches all our lives. We have not crawled out of our mother's wombs and, oh yeah, I'm going to be a life coach. Who are you? Oh, I'm a life coach. No, that's not how it works. And most life coaches have been doing other careers before, have been pursuing other careers before. And we all draw from our experiences in lives. And that is what makes us good coaches, because it's not just, you know, the basic techniques of active listening and mirroring back and asking what's next or what's the takeaway from the session. No, it can be that sometimes, of course, but it's not just that. And it's, I think that you have to pair it with your past experiences or else you're doing your clients a disservice.
Yeah, totally. And sometimes that doesn't feel great, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, well, for the client, it certainly doesn't feel great, because sometimes you're showing them things that aren't comfortable to understand and to realize. But those are I always like to call it the pivotal change. That's mm-hmm. when something goes, okay, shit, this is what I've been doing my entire life. Maybe I need to focus on working through this and making changes. And that sucks sometimes.
Yep. Yep. And sometimes we're the bearer of bad news. We really are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that absolutely. Sucks too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks too. And that is the responsibility that most people don't see when they look at coaches. It's just like, oh yeah, you're just listening there, you're doing mm-hmm and aha, and that's it. No. No, bitch. It's not how it's going down. No. No, because we ask the uncomfortable questions. That's what we do.
And
in a way we are of course we're always supporting and we should be. So when you go see a life coach, you can be sure that you have a person that's on your side always. And that in and of itself is so valuable. Mm. That in and of itself is, you know, is the reason why you pay for a life coach, because you have someone who listens to you and who is on your side. Mm.
Mm.
And then because we are on your side, because we are not, you know, your cousin or your sister or stuff like that.
You're impartial. Yeah.
We're impartial. And this is why we have to ask the difficult questions. We have to challenge you sometimes. We have to call you out on your bullshit every now and then. And this is the real service that we do to our clients too.
Yeah. And that's where you really, really see whether someone's ready to change.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. This is also where the coach and coachee relationship gets deeper, because this is where you realize, like you said, when people are ready, but this is also when you realize, oh, is this relationship that we have been establishing up until now strong enough to hold uncomfortable truths?
Yeah.
Sorry, truths or not. My German accent.
English is a weird
language sometimes.
that's true. Mm. It's It's just there's comfort there, and it can be difficult. It's tough to face. But I always like to look at it, and I'd like to disclaim this in the beginning of a coaching journey with a new client, is that this is a partnership. We are in this together. You know, there is no I'm bigger here or I know more than you. This is, we're learning things together and we're doing this for you throughout this journey.
And with you.
And with you, for you and with you. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's that. Yeah. It's somehow I think that coaching for me, because prior to the Animas training, I'd just been coached once and it was a great experience. But it wasn't the experience that put me personally on that journey. I just felt, you know, I kind of did it the other way around, because with my niche of certified intuitive eating counselor that I just knew that I wanted to do because no one else at that time in Germany was doing it. Now I have two colleagues, which is still like how many millions live in Germany? Like 80 million people. And we just have three people who have been training officially to become a certified intuitive eating counselor. That is insane. That's still not enough. Like that is not enough at all. And yeah, and I've just been one of three people who do that. Shout out to Ela from Hamburg and Lena from Cologne at this stage. But yeah, so I wanted to do that, and then I just figured out, okay, but I've never been counseling people. Like I've never been who am I to tell people what to do?
And right.
I wasn't a nutritionist before, or a dietitian, which most people who go the health at every size, intuitive eating route are. I have a background in cultural anthropology, which is something completely different. And in cultural anthropology, because our prime method of gathering information is field work, of course we had basic training in interviewing people. This is why I'm so good at this. No. So humble. No. No, of course we had like basic training in asking open questions and shit when you were interviewing informants for a scientific study. You know, that's just common sense. But we never had, you know, coaching training or anything like that, because we just collected information through interviews. We didn't counsel people, we didn't hold space for people, we didn't try to, you know, get people to figure out ways for them to make their lives better, which is a weird way to say what coaching is, but that's just the best way that I could come up with right now. But yeah, so we didn't get any training in that. And I just figured out, okay, yeah, I need to fill that void. I need to do something.
Yeah.
So before I started my Animas training, and during the first modules, I think during the first and second module, I simultaneously did a course in motivational interviewing, which is very similar to coaching, but it's not exactly the same. So motivational interviewing has one thing different from coaching. It's very similar in a lot of ways, that it's the same, like people really only respond to change in their lives and take positive action when they hear it coming out of their own mouths.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is, right?
Yeah.
So that's the same for motivational interviewing. But motivational interviewing has one thing that is very unique to that method, and it's called change talk. So there's one other layer to it that you do too in coaching. We also got trained on this. So it's nothing really new. It's just, they just have that label for it. So change talk is certain wordings that clients use that indicate change.
Okay.
And you get trained to listen to them very attentively, gather them up, like, you know, pick them up like flowers, and present them like a beautiful bouquet of flowers that is just, okay, so I've noticed this and this and this and this and this. What do you make out of it? What's next for you? So that is motivational interviewing. And I was very lucky to do that, because I think that that and the Animas coaching background that I had, like, really gave me a very, very solid sort of groundwork of really being able to hold people in that space, to coach people in that space. And like in coaching, we learn certain models. I can't disclose that now. we have certain tools and models. I will not disclose it further because it's trade secrets. Not really. You can find all of that online. It's not a big secret. Yeah, so basically if you wanna reach a goal, there's the so called GROW model, and I think I will put the Wikipedia page in the descriptions or in the show notes. So that is like one of the oldest coaching models ever. If you think of like athletic coaches to coach athletes or stuff like that. So that is a model. So it was interesting to start with something that doesn't have a distinct model. But that looks for change talk, and then put the models on top of that. So for me personally, in my counseling, coaching, whatever, telling people how to live a better life through their own words by listening attentively and whatever you want to frame it. Journey, I kind of have those nets and those security nets. And I feel that motivational interviewing and the Animus training are both my very strong interwoven security nets that I kind of show every time I coach people. So when I don't quite know how to respond to something, I always fall back to that.
Yeah, it's and, great. It's well put. It's a safety net. It's a support net. It's there, yeah. Ready waiting for you.
Yeah, that's exactly that. Let's talk about something that that I feel very, how should I say? I feel very cheeky talking about that with you because I haven't until this point in my podcast. But I love it because we're both colleagues, and I had another colleague on, Gina, the lovely Gina, that also was in our cohort.
Yeah.
And with her, we didn't talk so much about what it means to be a coach. We talked more about her niche, which is PMDD.
Yeah.
But I think that it would be great if you want to. It's just an invitation. It's a thing that such a coachy thing to say. So I know. Oh God, I'm horrible right now. Yeah, I'm horrible right now. So like let's make a kind of five things that your coach wants to tell you but can't in a session kind of deal out of it.
I see what you mean. Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah, let's be cheeky and let's do a kind of five things your coach wants to tell you in a session but can't because they're coaching you.
what shit do we want to point out that we have to find the right way to do?
Yeah, so okay, do you want to start?
That's yes, let's see. I'm sure that I've got a good handful of these.
Oh great. Like what you heard so far, well, if you want to support me, there's two ways to do it. The first one doesn't cost you anything, and that is giving me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and now it's called Apple Podcasts. To do that, you need to first and foremost get an Apple ID, and everyone can get one. It's not only reserved to Apple users. Android users can get one. PC users can get one. I even got one in order to post the podcast there. So that's not a big deal. And you look for Larger Living Podcast up top left, I think it is, for the PC version. You then find the podcast, leave your rating and your review. And why so many podcasters stress this is pretty easy. This podcast is listed in the health category. So it is automatically competing with other podcasts that feature not so health at every size topics, to say the least. So fat diets, I think the number one podcast in Germany at the moment is a keto podcast. And the second one is intuitive weight loss. And we all know that intuitive weight loss not only doesn't work, but also causes harm. So by pushing this podcast and other anti-diet podcasts, you make sure to spread the anti-diet message, and you make sure that this podcast shows up earlier in the search results for the health category so that all other people learn about intuitive eating and health at every size. And if you happen to have a little bit of money on your hand and you want to support me financially, which I greatly appreciate, there are also two ways to do that. So the first one is to become a patron of the show. You join patreon.com/largerliving, and I got 3 tiers set up for you. You can either decide to buy me a coffee monthly, a burger with fries, or a whole brunch, and you get different benefits from it. Every patron gets podcast episodes without ads. And if a monthly contribution is not your thing, you can still support me as a one-off by donating to my money pool on PayPal. And you use paypal.me/largerliving. You can donate as much as you want. One off won't judge you for it. And thank you so much for spreading the word. I am getting more and more messages of, hey, a good friend of mine recommended this podcast to me. I love it. Or a good friend of mine said that you have a different approach to food and dieting and exercise, and I'm willing to give it a try, or stuff like that. So it is your word of mouth that keeps me afloat, that keeps me alive, that keeps this podcast, you know, going and my work still going. And I really just wanted to make sure to thank you all for this. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. And I also want you to take good care of yourselves, because you deserve it.
And it's interesting, though, actually, before I go into this, I've got quite a lot better at saying the stuff that I don't want to say as a coach, but I find a coachy way of saying it, right?
Same.
So powerful. Yes. Give yourself that permission. And you know what? That is where some of the biggest changes have happened for my client, because you put their shit out and they understand.
Fuck it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And I also think that this was the next logical step in our coaching journey. Our speaking of our cohort, like speaking of like our journey into coaching.
Yeah.
Because when we come fresh out of the Animas course, mm-hmm. we kind of do things by the book.
Right.
Because we have been.
That's how we've been trained. Yeah, no. That's what we know.
That's how we've been trained. That's what we know. Yeah. Same with school. And then mm-hmm. you figured out, no, this is not all. No, there's more stuff out there. There's more stuff out there.
Yeah.
And then you figure out that you kind of sit on some thoughts and sit on some words a lot.
Yeah.
In coaching, that you don't allow yourself to say, because that would be unprofessional.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you find your work race around it, like you said, asking the questions that you really die to ask, but ask them in a coachy way.
Yeah.
And like having the most transformation with your clients, yes, at that point.
Exactly.
And also having, and that is like the stuff that I wanted to add, having another kind of level of growth as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because you allow yourself to be more authentic.
Yeah.
Which I always love, because mm-hmm. I mean, fuck it. It's just at the end of the day, it's your coaching style. At the end of the day, it's how you do coaching. At the end of the day, you have to be comfortable with what you do.
Yeah, and you'll attract work with that as well.
Yeah. So true. So true. And this has also been a part of my journey. And I've been nodding away so much, and I've been all the time, because it's the same. And I feel it's like a step almost in growing as a coach, in becoming a better coach also.
Yeah. Like, we're learning as well at every step of the journey. You know, I think a lot of the times coaches can be seen as like, you have everything, you've got all your shit sorted out, or you know everything. You come with these like awesome quotes that you put up and like all these things.
Oh my gosh. Oh, quotes, coaches. Oh my gosh. Yeah, let's talk about, let's make a little asterisk here. I will write it down and talk about quotes, coaches later. Yes.
Put it down, right? Yes. We make a list.
Quotes, coaches. Yeah. But go on, please.
Okay, so one of the things, like I said, I've now been implementing them into my sessions. So it's not something that I wouldn't say anymore. But one of the most powerful things I can say to someone is, you are holding yourself back. You are allowing this to happen. You have the control to do that. Why is that not changing yet?
Yep.
And that is, it's hard, because it sounds harsh, and it's hard to consume as well as a client, because you're like, it's hard to, it's a big pill to swallow to realize you're causing your own problem sometimes. it's a really tough pill to swallow, and not everyone wants to swallow that pill.
Yep.
Either it gets rejected, or you sit with it and you're uncomfortable, and that's where you grow.
Yes. Absolutely. And I've just been talking about that with a friend. It's just so weird because it always happens in the podcast. I have someone on, and I just talked about it with a friend or with my boyfriend, or I don't know, in a session.
Yeah.
I just talked about the drama triangle. Do you remember the drama triangle?
The triangle.
Who doesn't? So the drama triangle, for those who have not been in Anima's coaching school, which is all of you, is part of a collection of social games that Eric Byrne established in the 1940s, I think.
Wow, you know more about the details of it than I do.
Oh, really? It's just, I have the book Games People Play at Home, but I haven't read all of it. It's like he registered over 200 games. So these are, these games are unconsciously played, and they're like more interactions. It's not like really a game of Monopoly or anything like that. It's more intersocial interaction. It's like really games people play without even knowing it. And the drama triangle is a triangle, and it has three actors. It has the victim on one, like, end of the triangle, the perpetrator, and the helper, right?
Rescuer.
The rescuer, that's it. Thank you so much. Yeah, I always said helper, but I knew that it wasn't the right word. The rescuer. Yeah. Yeah, and in this triangle of interactions that those three actors make and do, the victim has the most, or gets the most resources. Out of all the actors, the victim gets the most resources. And this is why so many people really, without unconsciously knowing it, love their victim state. Because it gets them things.
Yeah.
It gets them attention. It gets them help. It gets them, you know, compassion. It gets them all of it. So from all of these three actors in this drama triangle, the victim gets the most stuff. And also what I found interesting is whoever leaves that triangle, I don't want to go into details with that triangle, but even if the victim decides one day I don't want to be a victim anymore and want to leave the triangle, and doesn't accept the help from the rescuer anymore, or doesn't accept the critique from the persecutor anymore, they are themselves viewed as a persecutor, which is very weird interaction. But this is how the drama triangle works.
And it's interesting how the dynamics change so easily, isn't it?
So that is really interesting, and I mean, we could talk about the persecutor too, but that is enough stuff for another episode. But yeah, that is really the thing. And when I, like in my niche as well, when people are struggling with emotional eating or binge eating, which is very common now in this pandemic, and also very normal, people who listen to this, it's normal. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with you. We are in a global fucking pandemic. It's just normal to compensate with food. Like, we are bored. Of course we have cookies. Come on. And also, who fucking cares? I sit here in sweatpants. Nina sits in sweatpants here. And we're being very professional and having a podcast interview. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's okay.
Totally. Totally. You can still function while wearing sweatpants. Yeah. It doesn't make you... Yeah. It doesn't make you less of a person. Yeah. And when I feel clients being stuck in the victim mode, I do challenge them. And I also ask the uncomfortable question of like, yeah, you realize that you have the privilege of getting help by XYZ. and that helped you short term, what would help you? If you're being really honest with yourself, what would help you long term? If you're being really honest with yourself, what would help you long term? Like, what do you mean long term? Like, honest, like, no, just like, this is your goal. We've been talking about it previously. This is your goal, where you want to be. You're doing A, B, and C. What would help you long term?
Powerful.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I mean, sometimes I got asked that in a coaching situation, and I still have a little bit of past trauma in that, because that coaching session was the worst coaching session of my whole life.
I think you mentioned this.
I've been bullied in coaching by a colleague, nonetheless, and I don't want to talk too much about it. But so it's great to ask challenging questions in coaching, and I just have to say that in the podcast interview, because it would be a disservice to all the listeners, and it would be a disservice to coaching community not to really, really underline this. Of course, it is great to ask challenging questions. The code of ethics of the International Coaching Federation, which we both kind of second degree belong to, because our coaching studies at Animas are certified by the ICF, states very clearly that before you ask a challenging question, you have to introduce a challenging question to your coachee. You have to ask for permission, which I try to do all the time. Of course, we are human. We fuck up too sometimes, and that's okay. She introduced it to me, and she said, is it okay if I ask you a challenging question? I said, okay, let's try. She did, and she asked, is it possible that you are the victim here, or are you the victim here? Which is a close question. And we can talk about it later if that's okay or not. And it's good to ask a close question. Sometimes it's not a big deal. And I said, no. I think she wanted me to say yes, because she then continued by saying, I don't believe you, challenging me more. And this is where I kind of draw the line, because, and then I said, no, I really don't think so. I told her why. And she said, well, then you don't have nothing that I can coach you about. Then you have nothing to be coached on. And I'm just like, no.
That's bad coaching. I mean, you would want to explore why you're not the victim and go down that route, not convinced. Okay, yeah.
So just to put it out there, if you work with either me or Nina, or of course coaches can fuck up too, but what should have been done in that situation was not to harp on the answer that she wanted to get out of me, but to explore why I mean this and what's behind there, and why do I think that is, or what do I, like, with what kind of meaning do I fill in the word victim? Like, what does victim mean for me? Exactly. Yeah. And not assume that her definition of victim is the same one that I share, because that's also a common mistake in coaching, that coaches estimate that there are, like, generally available definitions of something. No, the same word has a very different meaning for you than it does for me than it does for you, and that's the thing. So don't wanna harp on the bad coaching experience, but then I really looked at finding more information about how challenging coaching is done, because I wanted to get something positive out of that experience. I wanted to learn. And I really wanted to know, but I knew that she fucked up. Frankly saying, I knew that she fucked up, but I didn't know exactly when, straight after. And by the way, I was really like, I was crying my eyes out, so much so that I had to call the anonymous phone counseling afterwards. So,
Triggered.
Yeah. And I talked about it with my supervisor and all of that. So I'm better now and I can talk about it. And I watched a great video that I shared with the whole Animas group. We have a WhatsApp group, of course, of our whole cohort. And yeah, that was also an ICF coach that is one level above us. He is not an ACC. He is a PCC, like he's over that. So he's coaching coaches. And he said, challenging coaching is a fine line, and it only works when there's a rapport, when there's already a rapport. So being very challenging in the first coaching session is not ideal, not ideal. And you always have to check back with your coachee if they're feeling comfortable or not. So it's great to, you know, ask a challenging question, like, do you think you are the victim here? Yes or no? And then why? And then ask, how does that make you feel? That would be a great follow-up question. How are you feeling right now? Or how does it make you feel talking about it or something like that? Because it would build more rapport, and it would it would still, you know, figure out, meet your coachee where they're at. That would have been a great thing to do. And I really, I'm sorry, I'm digressing, but the point that I want to make is that good coaching can be challenging and should be challenging. Absolutely. Like showing the mirror to the coachee, which sometimes wears an ugly face and shows an ugly truth. But we should never forget that our service to our coachees is also to hold them, and also to offer, you know, to be comforting and to be on their side, because this is what we do. So of course, like, we're the most honest friend that you could possibly have, because we call you out on your bullshit. Right?
Yeah.
We are the most honest friend that you could possibly have, but we are also holding you. We give you space. We are there for you, with you.
Yeah. And I think you put that perfectly, Dot. I find a lot of power in asking challenging questions.
Yeah.
And you do need a certain level of rapport, but it's also A, how you portray them, say them.
Yeah.
And B, how you hold your client after they've been challenged.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good, great way that you just put it.
Yeah, sorry for rambling, but I really needed to put that out there when we're talking about challenging.
Yeah,
because and also in a way, I'm really grateful for that bad experience, because it really showed me not to do it. And I know that I am not very challenging as a coach. I'm less challenging than you, for instance. And I try to, my way of doing it is challenging with more open-ended questions, like asking deep questions of, okay, but you know that if you like binge eating, for instance, because that's just my field. That's just my forte.
Yeah.
What would be going on right now with you and your life if you weren't eating? Like the show so far? Why not hop on over to patreon.com and become one of my regular supporters? That way, you get all the podcast episodes without the ads, but most importantly, you do something else with it. Your contribution goes into a money pool, and from that money pool, I am able to offer SOS community-based coaching in my lunch hour from Wednesday to Friday. And you become one of the supporters for another person who might struggle with food and is in dire need of health at every size and intuitive eating coaching. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Wow. Now you got to dig deep, don't you?
Yep. And I love to do that. I love to dig deep.
Yeah, you do. That's a soft way, let's say, of doing it.
Yeah. And I know that some people want the rough approach. Some people want to get bullied in coaching almost. And there are some coaches who market that. There are some coaches like, oh, like I will not like this, what willy-nilly kind of coaching. I'm not for that. Like, no, I offer you results. I am there for blah, blah. And I'm just like, oh yeah, no, we're going to dig deep from the get-go. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to, I don't know. I'm not going to pamper you or anything like that. You don't get anything like that with me. And most of the time, it's weird. Those coaches are male. Right, cis in their 40s used to be managers. Right, and it's weird, it's I mean, it's weird, and they charge an astronomically high amount for their coaching sessions too, like £2,000 or euros or dollars or however for one single coaching sessions with them, but they promise no, we get results. Yeah, it's weird, and it's just so not me.
No, and I hear you. So I have a coach, and he's extremely challenging, and I love it. I'm the type of person that really needs that and wants that in a session. And it's funny because if super challenging is up here and really really what's the right word for this side? Soft and gentle is over here. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely towards this side, but I love that soft, comforting side too. I love it so much.
And you gotta have it.
Yeah,
you gotta have the balance, because one cannot exist without the other.
Absolutely.
So the way that I challenge my clients are really with a deep questioning, like this. Yeah, okay, so like what else would be going on? Yeah, or just like. When else did that? Come on, let's be honest. That's not the first time that you've been through this. You know this. You have been through a bad phase before, and you have dug yourself out of it. Mm. What can you do now? Mm. Stuff like that. So that's kind of how I see it. I'm still challenging, but I'm more like probing and digging.
Challenging. It's good. And that's the thing. That's why there are different coaches on this planet, because there are different humans that respond to different techniques. So
Of course. Yeah. And I think that you mirror also what you want to be coached, the way you want to be coached. That's just logic, because I don't like to be super duper challenged, mm-hmm. just because it stresses me out. I feel like I'm in an exam situation. And I'm just like, oh, you want an answer right now? Oh, I can't give you an answer right now. Let me think.
Yeah.
Can I think some more? Please, can I think some more? Can I tell you tomorrow? Yeah. And it really puts me on the spot, and I'm really not good at it.
Yeah, and I think coaches a good coach will read the room, you know, like who, what client will respond better to what. And I think that's a superpower in itself.
Yes, absolutely. I think that this also makes you a better coach, because if you have the same approach for just about anyone that you're not really coaching that individual, you're just slapping your method onto everyone. It's it's similar to shotgun marketing. how you know, I mean, you worked in marketing, you know what I mean when I say shotgun marketing. So shotgun marketing is basically employing the very same message for all of your channels, all of your marketing channels, all of your marketing outlets, and just, you know, reaching out without offering any more context, without doing anything. Just like, bam, here it is. Take it or leave it. That's shotgun marketing. Yeah, and hoping that something sticks. Unfortunately, that doesn't work like that in coaching.
Not quite.
Yeah. What else? Okay. What else could we both say that is like shit that we as coaches want to say, but that we sometimes cannot say.
Let me try to think of more. There's lots. There's plenty. I know there's plenty. Sometimes a really challenging question is, I don't know if you've ever had this, but if you're faced with a client that just says, I don't know. What can you do? I don't know. I don't know. You know, and part of that is, in my experience, when I've had clients like this, it's been it's scary to explore whatever they're wanting to explore. And there's resistance in that.
Hell yeah.
And B, they're just kind of waiting for answers. So taking that easy route, you know, like, I don't know, you tell me, you know? And something really powerful that you're just pointing out behaviors in clients, like, okay, why don't you want to explore this? I've noticed some resistance here. What do you think is actually going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's so much that often pours out, and then the session gets 10 times better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes I when they really ask me for advice, I give it. I know that this is not really coaching, it's more counseling, because I mean, if people have not dig deep in intuitive eating and have not been, you know, have just experienced intuitive eating through my social media, through maybe my podcast or through some other podcasts, and just start to, you know, grasp the concept of health at every size and intuitive eating, of course I kind of have to tell them what it is and what it's not. And I think that it's not a bad thing of telling them what framework I work with if they're asking me, and if they don't really know. So I kind of, you know, gently push them back to, well, you know, remember the 10 principles of intuitive eating. So could that offer an answer for you? Oh, I don't know. I don't know where to start. So sometimes I offer different things, like this and that. What would you like to explore? Yeah. If they really don't know, because I generally believe that if you're really, really deep in the depression woods, so to speak, if you're like really, really stuck in an absolute rut, you want to get out, you want to get coached, you want to see a way out of there, but you cannot. You really need input just to do something, anything. And that I recognize. And I might be very controversial in saying that. And it, as someone who has suffered from depression for such a long, long time, and who has really been deep in the woods, you cannot find your way out sometimes. You need external input. You need external input, and you're thankful for it. So any little thing that you can grasp yourself on helps. That I recognize. Yeah. But there's also the case of, I don't know, I don't want to talk about it. And then, of course, like, why? Why do you want to talk? Don't want to talk about it. Why is that a blockade for you? What are you avoiding? Stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about that. I think if I by ICF standards, I'm not a good coach. I'm not the right coach, and I'm okay with that now. Like it's. Like you said, like after we finished the Animath course, it's this beautiful, beautiful sort of groundwork that we have. But it's also encouraged us to go and find our own style after that.
Oh, yeah.
And that, I think that one of the things that I was like, no, I worried so much about practicing ethically, whatever that means in the world. I mean, must practice ethically. I must serve my clients this way. But I think anyone, and okay, maybe that's a bad statistic, but most coaches,
go on, I'm listening.
are good people and don't want to say anything that might hinder someone's growth or not serve them properly. And just knowing that, I know that whenever I do maybe fall into the counseling or the mentor kind of side of things, that I'm doing it from a place that I know it's not something that I kind of know or have read once in a book in Vogue like 2 years ago. No, it's something that I know and that I have experienced and that I can, that will serve my client. So I rest assured in that. And you too, you just claim it. You say, listen, this is, I can really relate. Like, this is something that I've experienced myself and this is what helped me. How does that sound for you? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I try to offer at least two things, at least every time, so that they have a choice. Yeah. Better three, but like two, three things is really great, because then they can choose and they can go, oh no, I'd like to try this. I like to try this. Oh, that sounds good. Or sometimes they even surprise me and say, oh, I actually would like to try this, but can we do it another way? I'm just like, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. It's what someone needs.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to offer input because the person is so lost. Yeah. And this is how I see it. This is what I do. And yeah, I've been thinking long and hard whether or not I really want that ICF certification for myself, because most of the listeners will not know this. And this is just an inner coaching kind of deal. And it really is not important to you as coaches, because it doesn't matter. You can work with someone who has never done any coaching course and be a phenomenal coach. Yeah. And you can work with someone who has done all the things, how you say, and who is a fucking shitty coach, like the one that really, you know, fucked up with me big time. So it really doesn't matter. And also, you know, a well-trained person can have a bad day and a non-trained person can have an excellent day and vice versa. So people are people, even coaches. Yes, we make, I'm sorry to break it to you folks, but yes, we are faulty humans and we make mistakes too. So I've been thinking long and hard, and I still am, whether or not to go down the route of becoming an ACC ICF coach, which means ACC stands for Accredited Certified Coach. And so there's a difference. See, our coaching course has been certified by the ICF, but we as individuals are not certified with the ICF. That is a whole other route where we have to take additional courses, be evaluated, show that we have a certain amount, that we have done a certain amount of coachings for money so that we kind of live off of it. Also, we have to undergo mentoring and have to do a written and oral exam. And then we get a nice shiny diploma that we can hang on our wall, like the good, I don't know, diploma fancying Germans that I am, at least. I know that it's still in me, like a part of me wants that shiny thing on the wall. I don't really know why. I cannot buy myself anything from it, but I a part of me wants it. Because, yeah, it's a title. Yeah. Yeah. It's nice and professional. Yeah. Now I'm the real coach. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Oh, I can do it all day. But yeah. So that's going on. But, I know that I do live in a country that gives a lot of titles. So titles are very important. And if I wanna maybe later not just be self-employed, but work for a company, an official registration with the ICF would be beneficial. So it's actually
opening up options for you.
Yeah, and especially in Germany. So I can tell my future employers, oh look, I'm not just a weekend seminar coach. I've done the course that is certified by Animas, and I myself am certified by the ICF, which is the biggest coaching organ, or the biggest quality organ for coaches, the biggest kind of association that does kind of quality control for coaching too, who sets the standards in the industry. That's just the ICF, because it's the biggest. It's not the only one, but it's the biggest. It is international, I am also able to work for international companies, not just for German ones. I do speak fluent English. So I could work for a company in the US, mm-hmm. even though I am living in Germany or something like that. So I've been thinking about that. But on the other hand, it means that all the stuff that I have learned up until this point of, you know, going more into the counseling realm with people, which is fair because I'm also a counselor, but that is then not coaching. And that I kind of have to wear different hats and also be very mindful of which hat I put on in which situation, especially in the evaluating situation. Because let's be real here. I think that coaching and also like learning how to coach is a little bit like learning how to drive. When you're in driving school, you know, you have to abide by the rules. You have to abide by the speed limits and by all of that. You have to, you know, be very mindful of everything. You have to be the model driver, so to speak, in order to get the license. But once you have the license,
and you play around with it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you also, you know, you find your own style of driving. You also find your own style of driving. So like my mom, for instance, when she was alive back then, she always was like 10 kilometers an hour under the speed limit constantly.
Just in case.
Exactly. And that is a style. That is a choice.
That is her style and her choice.
That is her choice. And I am more on the opposite end of things. So I am So I'm more like 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers an hour above the speed limit, because I kind of drive not according to the signs, but more into my gut feeling of how, you know, the how the traffic flows.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is how I do it. But yeah, sometimes the traffic flows in a direction where you are not abiding by the rules. And that can be said for coaching as well, I think.
Absolutely. I think that's a great analogy.
Oh, really? Well, thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a little co-host today. It's my cat, Benji.
Come to say hi.
Yeah, and you met her already. So this is Benji. Maybe you will hear some cat purring in the background, some very silent ones, but she just got bored, and she's her tail is hitting the microphone. I'm sorry, folks. she turned around now. You good kitty. Oh. Yes, you are. So I have one question that I try to
she really wants in on this.
That's the purring.
What would you like to say about she?
I mean, she is like the counselor. She's the catseller. That's who she is.
I love it. So she's very welcome on this podcast episode.
Yeah. I think she wants a word in, and she wants to tell everyone how she counsels and that she has a very specific method which she is employing right now. So whenever I elevate my voice to a certain level, she comes running and she bites my hand or my toes as if she were to say, snap out of it. Like an old grandma. Yeah, like the Cher quote. She's a little grumpy grandma who just wants her peace. And whenever I kind of get elevated in speech, sometimes just when I'm trying to make a point, she comes running and she bites my hand. So I think she wanted to introduce her method to the world.
Mm.
Have I done it well? Okay, she's not looking at me, so I don't
know. I was gonna say maybe not.
No, she's not. Okay. So I think that's a yes.
She's happy.
So the question I try to ask all of my podcast guests is a little long question, but I think it's a great question as room for opportunity. It goes a little bit like that. So what is a question or a topic that you get rarely asked, but that you are passionate about answering?
Oh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I rarely get asked, but I am passionate about answering. Hmm. Oh, I don't know how rarely this is, but something that what I'm really wanting to say now is being proud of being single.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Right? That's my thought.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not single, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love this topic. And do you know why? I think it's part of my own personal journey and things that I see my friends go through and clients go through. But like the power that you just find in yourself when you wholeheartedly love yourself and don't need any external validation is the most powerful, authentic version of yourself that you will bring to this world. That is a true core belief, and I'm so passionate to talk about it.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it. So let's just adjust this microphone here.
Yeah.
Because Kitty has been playing with it. The first thing that popped in my mind when you were saying that is Whitney Houston's song, The Greatest Love of All.
Mm.
And up until, I don't know, like really a few years ago when I was on my own little self-love journey,
mm-hmm.
I always cried when I heard that song because it was always, oh, this is for someone else, but not for me. This greatest love of all that she was singing about, that was I could never reach that. And that was on my mind.
Mm.
It's weird now because when I listen to it now, or even a few years ago when I was at that point, I'm just like, yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's exactly what you should do. Mm. Especially women and femmes in our culture get so knocked down and so talked down by so many people of not being enough, of not being good enough, beautiful enough, smart enough, I don't know what enough. And they always find something. They can always find something that you need to be. You know, stuff like atrocities, like the ridiculous thigh gap that you should aspire to or anything like that. There's always something.
Mm.
So you can get caught up in this so easily, especially with kind of my niche and my clients, but in general as well in life, you know, just this feeling of not being good enough. Mm. And then all of a sudden through like long personal growth work, and I really have to put that out there, it's not an overnight thing.
Nope.
It wasn't for me, and I'm sure as shit it wasn't for you either. The point where you finally kind of release that last bit, little bit of self-doubt, and you just get to the point where you can say in one sentence, I'm a total mess, and loving it. that took a lot of time.
Mm,
yeah,
it does. It takes time. I don't think that I know that it's not an overnight thing for anybody. One of the quotes or things that I like to say the most is that the relationship you have with yourself will set the tone for every single relationship in your life.
Yeah.
And that is, once you so truly, authentically love yourself enough to not accept anything that you shouldn't, everything changes. And it does. It really does. And that's not only romantic relationships. It's family stuff. It's friends. It's the accounts you follow on social media. It's everything. And the reason why I'm so passionate about it is because when you see these shifts in people, and listen, at the end of the day, your romantic relationships usually are the relationships that bring out the most shit that you have going on for you. Like it's your closest relationship, right? That and maybe family, but it's a completely different dynamic. I'm so passionate about it. Like when you see like the difference in everyone, in women and in men. I mean, I've experienced it more with women around me, but it's so freeing and it's so like destigmatizing, because if a woman is still single, God forbid, still single above the age of 25, or and that pressure, that external pressure that becomes internal pressure.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. That's a really good one. And realizing that the pressure that you're feeling is actually not your own.
Mm. Then it's easy to let go.
Yeah. Yeah. And can we talk about one thing if you have the time, because I'm mindful of the time and I just looked at the clock and
that's all good. Great. I'm good.
Me too. And the thing is, can we talk about this weird thing that is put on more women than and femmes than men, but on both as well. So I'm sure that the men listening to this will be able to identify with that as well. That weird notion that you are not complete until you meet the one. a lot of cat purring on that one. So I think she agrees. Yeah, I also think she agrees. So yeah. This weird the one thing, that just like this weird, oh, you are not complete until. You are not right until. You are. Okay, that's new.
It's
like, okay, Kat, just that's a new route you're taking here. Okay. Yeah, have fun.
Wave goodbye.
Look yourself out. The reality of a cat owner.
That's funny. Yeah, I haven't got one, so it's cool to see.
It's weird sometimes. It's weird. But yeah, I mean, she's a very compassionate kitty. She she's my feel good manager. She's my in-house feel good manager, and I love her. Yeah, now she's gone. she did her job. She's on a break. What I wanted to get back at is this weird idea that you are not complete by yourself, that you need someone else.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
And that you find this one mysterious one.
The missing puzzle piece. Whatever. It makes no sense to me. It doesn't.
I know, and it's really interesting, because I looked at it naturally from a female's perspective, from my perspective and my experiences with that. But I've taken the time to kind of talk to a few of the males in my life, and it's a really, really interesting perspective. And admittedly, I will wholeheartedly put my hand up that I full on went through a stage of I hate men and all men suck.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't? Like, who doesn't?
Right? I mean, it's just that Yeah, I went through that stage. But this is also to what we were talking about before, is when I had to really come to terms with the fact that I was causing my own problems in certain relationships, and I was accepting too much, and I was bending over backwards for the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And not in a sexual way.
I get it.
Yeah. But I was just doing too much. And not justifying any behavior of bad behaviors of men, of my partners, that they're not justifying it at all. I've had some shit things happen to me and shit things go on for me. But I had to sit there and go, this keeps happening. What the fuck do I need mm-hmm. to change?
Yep. You know? Same. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. It started out in my teens and 20s with, why do I keep falling for the same type of guy all the time? And then I was just like realizing, because shocker, I'm not heterosexual, so I've dated men mostly. Really dating women as soon as I moved to Berlin, and now I'm taking a little break from it due to COVID, but also like due to some bad experiences before. Not really looking mm-hmm. to date women, looking to have more friendships now, like queer friendships. So if a date comes out mm-hmm. of it, awesome. If not, great. So I might have a different perspective. I used to have the very heteronormative, monogamous perspective in mm-hmm. my teens and 20s. And then in my 30s, all of a sudden, a lot of stuff changed. It's not just due to the fact that I got older, because I refuse to think that. I don't know really why I refuse to think that, because it would undermine all the work that I've done, I think. I think that would just be undermine the work that I've done. And it was really this, okay, coming to terms with who I really am. Like, do I want to keep dating shitty guys? No. Like, no. No question here. So like you said, something needs to change. And done a lot of soul searching in my 20s mm-hmm. already, but then in my 30s, like really put myself under this kind of ultimatum of just like, come on, Dot, like, who are you fucking fooling? like you cannot bullshit yourself. Like, no, this is not how it's going to be. Like who is going to believe your bullshit? You say you're queer, but you've never really, you know, stepped into it and really started dating women on your own. You never really put yourself out there. Like, at least give it a try. Which I did. Mm-hmm. Had some great experiences, had some really bad experiences. Mm-hmm. That's life. And yeah, it's what we talked about earlier is also, I think we hold ourselves accountable as well to the fact that if someone really cares for you, they will be honest enough to kind of show you that mirror, hold that mirror in front of you where you can see yourself and like really realize, no, this is the pattern that I kind of have. No, this is what I've been going for. Why have I been going for the same type of guy who ended up in the end not being the right one for me, or the same type of girl, same type of person? Because there's more mm-hmm. than guys and girls out there. and then figuring out, and I relate so much to this way of coaching, of spending time with the outcome, like imagining what an outcome could look like, because that helped me so much. Like this, okay, what do I really want out of a relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as soon as I kind of got this in my head, then the next thing is, yeah, but do I need another person for that? No.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That I love. That was powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was my way. I'm not sure about you.
My way. So that's interesting. I was kind of I didn't have a choice to change my way.
Well,
it was either you will suffer a mental breakdown, an intense mental breakdown, or you will change your shit. Well, actually, sorry, both of those things went in tandem, to be honest. I fully didn't realize at the time that I was placing all of my happiness in, oh, it's fine, I'll be happy as soon as I find the right relationship, I'll be happy. Or as soon as I find the right relationship, I'll be happy. Or I am more valuable when I am in a relationship and I have a man. And I'm using man because my sort of situation. But I did not realize that until I came out of a relationship. I almost call it a spiritual awakening. And this, people think, I'm often when I talk about this, it's like, oh, I had the worst breakup ever. But it was the breakup that triggered all the work that I needed to do. So it was a period of my life where I literally felt like the world had been, what's that saying? The floor had been taken from my feet.
Oh yeah, we have the same saying in German. It's we say someone or something has taken the carpet and pulled it away under our asses. Yeah. I love that saying.
That's exactly what it felt like, and I had no choice but to grow. Like I literally had no choice but to grow, and it's when I really started doing my own soul searching, and that's been about 2 years now. And it's been sad, it's been happy, it's been calming, all at the same time, because you really have to sort of shed layers of yourself, you know, and of stuff that society has put on you that you so truthfully believe, and that it's not easy when you are shown XYZ 24/7.
Amen.
Yeah, right. And there's so much power in them, and people now, I think, with the platforms like Instagram and social media platforms, we're really exposed to people that are going against the grain, and I love that. Like I love a bit of controversy, you know, just to put it out there. Yeah, you carry on.
I just have to add, yes, they are there, but you have to look for them. That's the only thing I want to add.
Yeah, you're right, and you create your own social media paradigm, if we may.
Yeah, AKA bubble, how I like to call it.
Exactly. You create that for yourself. But yeah, I think it was just learning to let go of creating happiness outside of myself, and being completely okay, and also just trust. I didn't have any trust before. I didn't have any trust in myself. Like now I would like to be in a relationship, and I'm very excited for that relationship to come into my life whenever the time is right. But I trust that it will come. Whereas before I was frantically dating or frantically accepting stuff that I shouldn't, because having a partner was way better than being single, even if it was a bad partner or the wrong relationship. Whereas now I'm like, I'd rather be single than with the wrong person. And I mean that to my core.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly that. There's a, so, you know, I'm living the polyamorous lifestyle. I allow myself to have several partners at once, which I don't have at the moment. I used to. And the thing is that in order to do that, you really have to be comfortable with yourself, like to an absolute level. So self-care is very, very important in poly cycles poly circles. Just because, you know, when you let your partner go out on a date with someone else, it takes guts to do that.
I can really imagine that.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't mean that polyamory rids yourself of jealousy overnight. No. I'm still jealous. I still, you know, have my little kind of jealous things that I face. And jealousy looks different for every single person. So for me, it looks more like fear of abandonment. For my partner, it looks more of fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same. We give it the same name, but it doesn't really show up the same. Yeah, so part of it is like really learning how to sit with uncomfortable emotions.
Yeah.
And learning to talk to your uncomfortable emotions and getting to know them, being open enough. You don't have to be all the way open, like, oh yeah, I'm just great with my job. Because no one, like, let's be real, like no one starts out like this. Like no one is just sitting casually on their ricamière and is just, you know, no one is just, oh yeah, jealousy. Oh yeah, I'll be a dear. Fetch me a scone and a glass of tea, jealousy. Oh yeah, we're gonna have a lovely little chat to Lou. No, this is not how it starts out. No.
No, that's not realistic.
No, it's not. That's not how it goes. It starts out being highly uncomfortable and and like really, really hearing the absolute bad thoughts that run through your head.
Mm-hmm.
But then figuring out, yeah, this is also me, but this is not all of me. And then figuring out what part of that is me, and then talking to yourself and just like, oh, hey, jealousy, there you are. What do you want? What are you really after? Like, what's really going on here? What's bothering you? Come on, let's have a cup of tea and some scones together and talk it out. let's do it, but let's talk it out. Let's come on. Yeah. Come on, sis. What's going on? And that's it. And so this is how, from the poly lens, the most important relationship that you have in the whole collective or whole network or however you are doing poly is the one that you have with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's my poly take on things. And I just want to stress that it doesn't come overnight. It really, really doesn't. And it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of looking at ugly parts of yourself. And being willing to see like stuff that you might be ashamed of, even stuff that you don't want to share with other people too. And that is fine. That is your right to do so. But owning it in a way of saying, yeah, like I said, this is also me. This is part of me. But that doesn't define me. So I am jealous, but I am not jealousy personified.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And shedding. Yeah, I really like the term of shedding layers, because it's not a different you. It's just a an updated version of you.
Yeah, I like it too.
I get so passionate about this because I really just see those pivotal shifts after this relationship with yourself comes. And listen, it sounds like we were talking about in the beginning how your coaches sound like they have all their shit together. No, I'm constantly facing some new growth shit that I have to face and that I do not want to. And sometimes I ignore it happily. Sometimes I binge watch, you know, 7 episodes of a series just so that I don't have to touch it. And that's okay. That's part of the process, you know? But it's just, yeah, you're constantly, I think that is the message that I just wish I could tap onto everybody's head in this planet, is that you are constantly evolving and you are constantly learning new things, and that can be overwhelming sometimes, and that is okay. It doesn't always have to happen now.
Exactly. That's so lovely. Thank you so much for this, Nina. This is great last words. I couldn't I couldn't add anything more to that. That's just the perfect. I love it. I love it so much. So would you mind telling the listeners and maybe viewers later, but the listeners, where they can find you? So if they want to, you know, get coached by you or learn more about you.
Absolutely. That's perfect. So I am on Instagram. That is my main feed. I am at Coached by Nina. And I have you, Dot, so they can find me through your followers list. I just put out little snippets of my own content. And it's something that I really like that you said, Dot, is that when we have our clients, we have them in our professional selves, right? And in our sessions, but then we really bloom we can really sort of share our insights and our knowledge when we're not 100% in there. And that feeds in so much to our capacity as well. So yeah. Yeah. Coached by Nina on Instagram.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Such a powerful conversation. I enjoyed myself so much.
Oh, me too. I had a blast. Especially like shit coaches want to say to you, but they can't because they're coaching you.
That definitely is, like, there should be like a highlight on Instagram for that.
No, I think I will name that episode this.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's a good episode. Okay. I click on it.
Yeah, but that's the reality. That's really how it is. Like, sometimes I want to some of my clients, I told you that before we started recording. Sometimes I want to take them and I want to shake them and we're just like, come on, you got this. I know you got this. Why can't you see?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I want to do. Yeah, that's kind of my last word on this. So, yours was better. Yours was more spiritual, more holistic. No. As always, I offer the toilet humor, but I think that it's very necessary to kind of level.
They both balance.
It's a balance. So it was a blast having you on, and you can come back anytime if you want to, just like open invitation and talk more about some other stuff and being single and happy and stuff like that. So yeah. I openly invite you again to this podcast, and I thank you. I have to say goodbye. So just
you may have noticed technically obese, I'm wobbly, jiggly, and round. In a word, quite frankly, I'm fat. The word fat can sometimes cause a bit of shock. Some people are offended, but I'm not. I've owned it and reclaimed it, and I'm not afraid to say it. Why my fat body rocks. The war on obesity's a pile of shit. They just want to sell you one more diet book. They spend $650 billion round the world, so we're at war against the way that people look. Some people wanna clutch their pearls and worry about us. They should be dieting! Dear God, what about their health? But there's no correlation between health and my appearance. So you can keep your damned opinions to yourself. I won't apologize for taking a this, and it's a tiger in the bedroom, and that's why my fat body rocks.